둘, 셋, 파!
Borahe Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Hello, and welcome to Long Time No See, the podcast. Each week, we'll be pairing two blindfolded comedians who've agreed to sit down with a mystery guest. I'll be putting them on the spot with a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Without further ado, please remove your blindfolds and introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Michael.
Hi, Andrea.
I have to be honest with you, I am so relieved to see it's you.
Do you have any irrational fears? What's the worst fad you were into? Is there any job that you would be terrible at?
Underwater welder?
Don't say that about yourself.
Do you guys have any useless talents?
I kicked one of those delivery robots.
Got what? You kicked one?
Yelling. I kick those all the time.
They have names on them.
Good.
I can make smoke come out of my mouth with nothing.
Do it.
You want to see it?
What the f***? Are you a dragon?
Out now, Long Time No See, the podcast, season 2. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Consequence Podcast Network. Welcome to Going There, the crossroads where music and mental health meet. This season of Going There is brought to you by Johnson & Johnson, who believes that health is everything. Their strength in healthcare innovation empowers them to build a world where complex diseases are prevented, treated, and cured, where treatments are smarter and less invasive, and solutions are personal. Through their expertise in innovative medicine and medtech, they are uniquely positioned to innovate across the full spectrum of healthcare solutions today to deliver the breakthroughs of tomorrow and profoundly impact health for humanity. Learn more at www.jnj.com, at Janssen US, and at JNJINNOVMED on Twitter. Today we are talking with singer-songwriter, musician, Jordan Miller, front person of the Canadian rock band The Beaches. You may know The Beaches from their songs Blame Brett and Edge of the Earth. Their music has been described as riveting, anthemic pop punk, and jump around catchy. They have a new album called No Hard Feelings that drops August 29th that includes the singles Did I Say Too Much and Last Girls at the Party. And they start a world tour in late July, including the Churchill Park Music Festival on July 29th in St. John's, Canada. So check out The Beaches, music, tour info, and merch at thebeachesband.com. Now on the Going There podcast, we have the tough conversations to address important issues so we can learn from each other, challenge the stigma of mental illness, and get the care we need. And one issue that may not seem like a tough topic, but can be incredibly common and damaging, is boredom. Now, boredom often seems harmless enough. We just can't find something to occupy our mind or interest us at a given moment. And sometimes that's all it is. And we can take a moment to find something to focus on that interests us. But oftentimes, being bored can reflect something that is more problematic. That we are not connected with ourselves, our lives, or the people around us. Or perhaps we are feeling empty and hollow, or that we are feeling shut down, not because there is nothing going on, but rather that there is so much going on that we may feel overwhelmed. And these experiences of boredom may reflect our feeling depressed, anxious, or angry in a given situation. Worse, boredom may seem harmless if it's temporary. But if we are perpetually feeling bored, it can soon feel very distressing to the point of being intolerable, and we start doing whatever we can to find something that interests us. Now, if this is something healthy, like doing extra work at school or a job, doing a puzzle, taking a trip of some kind, it can work out okay. But we often find unhealthy ways of coping with boredom, using drugs and alcohol, eating unhealthy foods, starting arguments, or seeking out unhealthy relationships. In some cases, even engaging in self-harm like cutting. and the cycle of boredom and unhealthy behaviors to cope with boredom can over time really damage our mental health and well-being. And so Jordan talked about her struggle with boredom, and particularly how it unfortunately can be an intricate part of the life of a professional musician. And she describes how boredom can often result in anxiety and depression. She explained both the ways that she coped with boredom and the resulting anxiety and depression in both healthy ways, as well as unhealthy ways, such as substance use, in what she described as becoming chaotic Jordan. Now, as we progress through this season of Going There, our goal is to bring you, the audience, further into the conversation. We'd love to hear your feedback, questions you have that have been sparked by our conversations with these incredible artists, and topics you'd love to see addressed. If you enjoy the show, please leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. These help other folks find their way into the conversation so they can go there with us. So let's go there and listen to what Jordan has to say. Hey, Jordan, welcome to Going There.
Hi, I'm so excited to go there with you.
Yes, we are going to go there. And where we are going to go, something we talked about right before the podcast, is boredom. And that is such a common and really under the radar mental health issue, because everybody struggles with it. Very few people take it seriously, and it causes all kinds of problems. And so why don't we just start there? Obviously, the song Everything is Boring is at least where I assumed that boredom was a good issue for you guys. So let's talk about that, your experience with boredom and how you deal with it.
Absolutely. Well, I guess to give a little bit of background for the folks who maybe don't know me or who I am, I'm a musician. So I'm constantly thinking about my feelings, especially around mental health and sometimes even about relationships. So this is very exciting for me to be here. But I guess something people really don't know about being in a band or being a touring musician is that you do deal with a lot of boredom. Yes, there are extremely high highs, like being able to perform and being able to travel. You're putting your body under like a lot of pressure, lack of sleep, yada, yada, yada. But the thing that, like, I guess most people wouldn't think about, you know, with my job is that there is so much sitting alone and there's so much sitting down and waiting, and you're constantly bored. You are constantly waiting in an airport or waiting in a weird venue in a weird smelly green room and in your own head. And yes, like, you are doing it with your band and with your team, but it is a lot of alone time and there's a lot of sitting around and waiting. And then there's also a lot of boredom when you're at the studio too. Like, you know, you're not singing necessarily for the full 16 hours that you're in the room. You are sometimes waiting for everybody else to do their stuff before you can get to doing your thing. And I definitely didn't... I learned about myself that I don't cope very well with boredom. I got into some kind of unhealthy habits that sort of when I started drinking a lot to kind of cope with that, which wasn't necessarily the best choice. But since then, I found lots of strategies to help with my boredom. I do the New York Times crossword puzzle. I also journal. I make sure I journal like exactly things that I can do during the day, like if it's like running errands or like fixing a broken purse that I have, like a random broken purse. Like, I'm like, okay, that can take up an hour of my time while I'm waiting to do other things, you know, rather than just sort of sitting and stewing and using substances to fix that old issue.
So let's talk about the song Everything is Boring. Now, one of the things that I find very interesting about this conversation, I find it, you know, the topic very interesting, but musicians have been telling us about the boredom on the road and in the studio for generations, and we do not listen. And it's very parallel to what happens for people. You know, if you're lucky, when you say you're really depressed or you're really angry or you're really anxious, hopefully you have some people who listen. But if you say that you're bored, there's like a scorn that comes in, and it's just like, how dare you be bored, and how dare you take up my time talking about boredom? And so I want to talk about the song Everything is Boring and kind of what your guys' experiences were with just sharing with people, hey, we're bored. And you haven't listened to any of the other musicians about being bored, so maybe you'll listen to us.
For that song in particular, when we were writing it, it was, I believe that Blame My Ex came out 2 years after COVID kind of ended. I know there was sort of like, it was a slow end, but you're absolutely right. People often don't consider like musicians' experiences to be like, they don't really allow for people who do what I do to like to be bored, because like we do have like a very exciting and unique job. So I think like when people hear us complaining about dealing with boredom or depression, it can be like, oh, boo hoo, like you get to travel and do all these things. But so I think, but people were a lot more forgiving, I guess, of me discussing that sort of stuff because it came out of, it came right after the pandemic. So everybody was like, oh yeah, of course you're bored. Everybody's bored. We're all stuck at home. We're all sort of like losing our minds. So people were a lot more forgiving about writing about us sort of discussing that at the time. And my other thing is on the subject of like people, what their opinions are regarding our music and stuff. I don't really care. Also, I think like no matter what, you kind of just have to write about what's sort of at the front of your brain and what's like interesting and topical for you. Otherwise, like you're never going to like have a really good song. So,
and let's talk about, just going back a little bit, you know, we're just throwing around the word boredom. For people, boredom manifests differently. And one of the things that particularly is a feature of boredom, at least for some people, is emptiness. Mm-hmm. Is that, and so I'm kind of curious what your experience, what actually happens when you're bored? Like, how do you know you're bored? And is emptiness a part of that?
It's not necessarily emptiness for me. I'm a very anxious person. So when I'm bored or when my brain isn't focused on, you know, finishing a song or completing a task, like when I'm not like, I think there's a difference between like boredom where my anxiety sort of gets to like creep up and I start thinking about like terrible what if scenarios. That's sort of what happens when I'm bored and not thinking, or when I experience boredom in two ways. There's one where I'm like, where I'm like, oh, I've watched like 12 episodes of Bob's Burgers. I'm kind of feeling depressed. I need to do something really crazy. And in those situations, that's usually when I'd be like, oh, well, I'll just go to the bar next door and have a drink. A way I've coped since not doing that is like a crazy thing I did was I got a tattoo on my back, which is maybe not the most helpful suggestion, but it's something that helped me do something like a little wild to like shake up sort of the monotonous Bob's Burger marathon that my brain was doing. And then the other thing that happens when I'm bored or when I'm like sort of sitting by myself and I'm not listening to a podcast or distracting myself with something else is that I will kind of let the anxious Jordan in me start to take over. And it's not always fun to have her driving the car.
And so one thing when you're talking about the anxious Jordan, because it's interesting, mm-hmm. in theory, if we're bored, there should be an equal opportunity for what we might refer to as more positive or healthy thoughts to come in as much as anxious and potentially self-destructive thoughts.
Yeah.
But somehow it doesn't usually work that way for people.
No. Well, I'm just like an anxious person and I've just started doing therapy this year. So I'm not super familiar with like all the nomenclature and everything, but I have discovered that like my baseline is like just extremely anxious, you know? When I leave my house, for instance, I like take pictures of the stove, of the fireplace, of the fridge, of my toilet, of like everything, so that I make sure that I didn't leave like a poop in the toilet for my boyfriend to see, or like I didn't, worst case scenario would be like leave my stove on so that I accidentally kill my dog. This isn't like what what the regular average person would do. This is like very anxious behavior that like I resort to, and like the taking pictures is sort of my way of coping and being like, okay, I have the pictures, I have the evidence that I made sure everything was squared away before I left. And so when I'm, you know, not focused on doing a task or my job or whatever, like my brain will naturally revert to like kind of bad what if situations. I don't think that's like necessarily everybody's experience with boredom. I also like have experienced when I'm feeling depressed. My other experience with boredom is like, well, I'm just too sad to even worry about that stuff. And that's when I'll seek out kind of like destructive, or like I'll party all night, or I will get a back tattoo.
Yeah, and let's talk about that, and then I want to circle back to some of the stuff you were talking about with the taking pictures. But with Last Girls at the Party, I found that to be kind of interesting, both listening to it, but then just reading the lyrics, like just kind of reading it on its own, because one of the things that I found myself thinking was, am I supposed to be cheering for this? Like, this is awesome. Or am I supposed to be like, right. But the thing that's very tough though, is sometimes it's very difficult to know when you are feeling bored, not you, but any person, bored or depressed or anxious, and you go do something, and you go do something that's fun, or that's a bigger, you know, it's kind of bringing you outside yourself. Sometimes it's tough to know, okay, when is this good and when is this just maybe going too far?
This is like literally what I've been trying to figure out for the past 6 months. I think like for the longest time, I really like didn't want to even think about mental health, because I was always of the mind like, well, I'm like a bad girl. And like the bad girl is like what my fans know me for, what my friends know me for. I do like crazy destructive things sometimes, especially to myself. Like I used to date lots of people that were mean to me, or, you know, stay up all night partying. And it got to the point where I was like, am I doing this because it's fun and it's making me feel like a human being, and I'm just doing this every once in a while? Or am I seeking out these kind of chaotic experiences just as things to write about and to like include in my songwriting catalog? And it got to the point where I was like really starting to lose myself in these like pursuits, and it took like my partner and my bandmates and my manager to be like, no, like you can have balance in your life. You can like wake up and go to the gym and do therapy and like be introspective about yourself, and you can still have like a little bit of chaos every once in a while, you know, or and you can still write about feeling too chaotic sometimes while you're also trying to better yourself. You know, like there doesn't have to be an either or in this. And again, this is something specifically that I've gone through as like, as a musician, as an artist, but I think it's like the idea that people don't think they deserve to work on their mental health, I think is something that a lot of people can relate to, you know?
Yeah. I find something that's very difficult is that when you're feeling chaotic, I should say, when I'm feeling chaotic inside, I think acting quote unquote normal or healthy in some ways, it can make things worse at times, or can feel worse at times, because it's a nice sentiment, but it isn't necessarily a reflection of where I'm at. I'm always feeling like there's a kind of, not a false self. It's not really, that's too strong of a term, but it's not really where I'm at. And so I'm kind of curious for you, like how do you translate that? Like what is that chaotic feeling for you? That might be a better question. And how does it get like kind of managed in those quote unquote healthier situations, as opposed to chaos matching chaos, and at least there's almost like a validating quality to it.
That's the whole thing, especially when I really struggled with writing this last record, because I was dealing with a lot of those thoughts. I was really playing into the chaotic version of myself that I'm often like using that side of myself to write a lot of my songs. Like if you listen to Shower Beer, Last Girls at the Party, Blame Brett, it's a lot of like me telling on myself regarding my mental health. And I drip the lyrics in lots of humor because I find it very difficult to be vulnerable. Like this is a very new thing that I'm even speaking so candidly right now, without lots of jokes. But I felt like I was, you know, using that person and that identity as a bit of a clutch. And like, instead of being honest about that, I was like feeling a lot of anxiety and stress and pressure about recording this new record and, you know, feeling really run down and tired and bored and kind of unhappy with where I was. Cause I'd just done like a 12-month tour and then immediately launched into writing this. I like just sort of put on the mask of like, I'm going to be chaotic Jordan and I'm going to like day drink and write about like all of these crazy things and I'll just be her. And I used to tell myself that like, you know, me being her in writing about these experiences and my, you know, anxiety and depression and, you know, substance issues even like was good enough and was me dealing with my mental health when really I think that I was just sort of, I was being honest with what I was discussing, but I wasn't really like, I was saying what I was feeling, but I wasn't actually like doing anything positive to change. And I think like what you said and like, you know, there is truth to like doing healthy, like that sometimes when you put on the mask of like, oh, I'm going to do healthy things, even when I'm feeling like really chaotic and anxious, that can sometimes, you know, not help. But it also like to the other side, it, like I did find that like once I started getting up and in the morning and, you know, working out twice a week and even doing something like as lame as Othership, where I have to go in and listen to somebody like and sit next to someone who's sweating profusely, but like really just focus on my breath. And I'm like, oh, like this is really like cringy. And I can't believe I'm here right now listening to people talk about breathing. I really want to laugh and leave and just reject all of this hippie shit. But once I just sort of like threw out all of my insecurities about all of that stuff and just actually did focus on breathing, I was like, oh, hey, like I also do feel better. Sorry, I don't know. I kind of came full circle to that.
No, that's, I think that's important because a lot of it is about understanding the source of the chaos. I mean, the truth is we never really know the cause of anything. I mean, that's like, we can't actually look back and do the personal experiment. Well, this causes this, but you can make guesses and then try to treat it accordingly. And I think that like, for example, some of the things that you just talked about, but also definitely happen to musicians, it's like, okay, if I'm feeling chaotic because I'm not sleeping at night.
Yeah.
If I'm feeling chaotic because I'm not eating healthy, if I'm not, you know, chaotic because I'm not exercising, because I'm drinking too much, then, you know, and, or if I'm feeling chaotic because I have something emotionally that's happening on that level, yes, the quote unquote healthy things, they might feel a little bit different or off, but not if you're doing it, I think, with intention, being like, I, you know, sort of saying like, I'm feeling chaotic, I haven't slept, I have to go to sleep. You know, like my breathing is all, you know, breathing is a big part of anxiety management. My breathing's all over the place. So I think that's one way to kind of merge the two, is that I think people sometimes are almost forced to quote unquote act healthy, but they're sitting there being like, I think the term used was it hippie shit or was it hippie bullshit?
Hippie shit. I just think hippie ass bullshit. I think there is something to the hippie ass bullshit. I just also feel that especially nowadays, like a lot of people like are sort of selling it rather than actually like intentionally taking like the good things from it. Like people are sort of using it as like a platform to like sell Pilates equipment or, you know, and I think like, you know, if you were like when I was really struggling with anxiety and depression and I was seeing like, especially on Instagram, you know, like again, curators or just, you know, friends be like, oh, I start the day with like a 10 minute meditation and then I have my bone broth. It's just like, at the beginning, I just wanted to be like, oh, puke. Like, but if you put all that aside, you're right. Like at the end of the day, like breathing and stretching are good for you, you know, and they do help.
I think that if you can kind of say to yourself, look, I'm going to make the link between what I think, and that's all it is, the cause of my chaos, yeah, and something that I think is going to help. And then you can ask yourself, like, so for example, you know, I know, you know, back in the day, like for me, the way that it would go is it would just be chaos, drinking all night. And then you wake up in the morning and you're kind of like, why don't I feel good? I should feel good. And I do a little bit because maybe there's stories from the night or you had a good time with a friend or something like that. But,
oh, totally.
But
No,
go ahead.
And it's also like you used to be able to do that. Like I remember in my early 20s, like I would do exactly that. Then like stay up all night, then wake up with like 2 hours of sleep and go work at a frozen food store and just like have a bagel in the frozen food store, then do it all over again. And I loved that part of my life. But like the more you have like those really long nights where you're drinking all night and maybe going to after hours and then waking up, like the stories don't, they're not worth it anymore. You're like, I feel terrible.
Well, listen, if you've never gone out drinking, worked at a yogurt store and had a bagel in the morning, arguably you've never lived. So, I mean, for the people who are seeking that, you know, just do that at least once. But I think the thing that I guess I would wonder about to bring it together is, you know, asking yourself, like we'll do, you know, sometimes we'll do these like, I guess, functional analysis is I guess one term of it, but just basically saying like, okay, if this happens and then you do this, what happens? I mean, it's just basically an experiment, right? And just asking yourself, it's like, okay, you felt chaotic, you felt badly, you went out drinking, how'd you feel the next day? And you can just ask like, look, if for some reason that's something that you wake up and you feel amazing and you don't feel chaotic anymore and you just, you know, go about and you never feel chaotic again. It's unlikely, I think, but look, good for you. But if you sort of say to yourself, I feel chaotic and I made sure to get a good night's sleep, do I feel less chaotic? You know, or I ate healthy food, do I feel less chaotic? As long as you're open-minded and doing an experiment about it, you'll find what works for you, I think.
Oh, totally. And, you know, for me, like, I took a month off partying and drinking and when I went to the Junos, like I had a big night and I was like, okay, I've taken a month off, like let's see how I feel. And what worked for me was like having a chaotic night every once in a while, especially if like all my girlfriends are in town, like, you know, we're doing cosmos and gossiping, and maybe like getting all dressed up and going dancing too. It's just like, for me, doing that again and again and again, especially when I was on the road, like it, I didn't work for me. But occasionally doing it, you know, really throwing it back is like, it's fun. It's great.
Yeah. And so that was one of the things that you were talking about. I want to go back to the other thing that you were talking about, which is the anxiety and the taking the pictures. Because
people doing that?
I'll be honest with you. I kind of thought it was a pretty decent idea, to be honest. I don't know what that says about me. Because, I mean everybody, I mean, like I think that generally speaking, one of the problems with anxiety in terms of, I think, how people deal with it, or chaos, or pretty much any emotion, is that we assume that if it's uncomfortable, it's bad.
Yeah.
But the simple fact of the matter is that you brought up some, I think, important things. It's like, okay, is the stove on? Did I leave a poop in the toilet? Right. Yeah. It's like, you know, I don't know, on a core level, I don't think those are bad things to wonder about. And at some point, most people who handle those situations well, they either say to themselves, well, I don't care, which I don't really think is all that great of a strategy. Or yeah. they say, they'll say something like, okay, I'm looking at the stove. I turned it off. Let me remember. But if you just add, especially with phones now, you just take a picture. To me, if that takes 5 seconds and you can relax the rest of the day, I'd be curious just if that was part of a bigger picture of checking behavior, because if it's really just that, I don't know. It didn't sound so problematic to me.
The issue with me though is that like I'll take the picture and then I'll go back downstairs, but my anxiety's still there. So I will go up and take the picture again. And then I'll go back downstairs and like think like, oh, but did I take a picture of the incense holder? Then go back and do that. And then I'm like, oh, I went back up again. Did I accidentally turn the stove on, even though I know I didn't? Like, the problem with me is, like, I'll just keep going. And there's only so much memory on my, like, I constantly, like, every 6 months have to go through my phone and delete, like, these millions of pictures of the stove and my freezer. And anyway, I think it does come from a good place of, like, it's a pragmatic idea, like, hey, I'll take a picture of it today. I'm working on this with my therapist where I start to eliminate the things that like I maybe don't need to, like the poop in the toilet. Sorry, I can't believe I've said poop in the toilet like 4 times on this podcast.
I don't think there's a married person out there who isn't like, you know, right there with you. I think they would say shit in the toilet, but like,
yeah, shit
you know.
In the toilet. But my therapist was like, Jordan, like your boyfriend is not going to leave you if you accidentally like leave a skid mark or a shit in the toilet. Like it's, you probably don't need to add this to your cornucopia of like anxieties that you fester on every morning. And so I'm working with her to get it down from like just taking, you know, taking 3 pictures. I got it down to 2 this month, which I'm very excited about, but I basically like, I have a limit. I can only take 2 pictures. And then I'm supposed to be deleting them like at the end of every day. No, I think like it could, and I've actually, you know, I've been trying to sell this idea to a lot of people, and some folks are like, no, that just sounds like you have terrible anxiety and aren't handling it well at all. Other people, I think, who also have like some anxious tendencies. Folks, for instance, who travel a lot and travel early like me, sometimes I'll screenshot that, like, I've set my alarm and make that my...
But see, here's the thing that I think is... This is my opinion, not whatever you're doing in your therapy. It's, you know, stick with that and whatever. But my opinion is that the issue is that whenever people have those concerns, in theory, what people are saying to them is... They're focusing on the percentage chance of it happening, but they're not necessarily focusing on the catastrophic nature of the consequence, right? Yeah. So for example, like one might say, okay, if you leave a skid mark or poop in the toilet, I think this is totally unrelated, but I feel like if poop in the toilet is not on your next album, I think I'm going to feel personally slighted.
My band is going to be so mad at me.
Poop in the toilet. I like you can hear it at a concert, you know. I would sing it. But like you know,
girls shit too.
Girls shit too. That's even better.
Everybody shit.
I think there's a thing everybody poops, but it's everybody
there's.
We're in the game. But like I think as a so to sort of say and forgetting actually I brought up married people, but I would defy anybody who was single and in a new relationship to tell me that it didn't occur to them that like pooping for the first time in front of them, leaving skid marks, like forgetting.
Oh my God. It's in the first season of Sex and the City where Carrie farts in front of Big and she has panic attacks thinking that like she's ruined.
That means it's practically fact. Like at that point, so if it was in Sex and the City, but the thing is, is that we all know that when we're concerned, what people tend to focus on is the percentage chance that it happens. And it's like, okay, like it's perhaps a low percentage chance. Same thing when people get on airplanes. It's like getting on an airplane is a low percentage chance of something bad happening. But what people don't focus on is what do you do? How do you manage? the concept of something catastrophic. And that's not so easy. Like, okay, is it likely that your boyfriend is going to break up with you for that? No. But really what we have to manage in that situation is, how do we feel about just the concept of a breakup, or the concept of the stove being on there being an explosion? And that's harder to dismiss, I think, to some degree.
It is harder. And I think the other thing for me too, it's interesting you brought up airplanes, because I get a lot, like a lot of people are like, are you nervous traveling so often? And the one thing is, like, I'm never nervous on the airplane, because I'm like, if it goes down, like, there's nothing I can do. Like, it's like, okay, bye, peace out. Like, it's happening. But for me, like, where my anxiety really kicks in is where, like, it is, the fault would be on me. So, like, it's not that there's a fire in the house, it's that I started the fire, you know? But you're right. But it's interesting, because there are some times when I think you have there's a reason for you to be anxious. So last night I heard a noise outside, like, I have like two balconies, and I was like, you know what? I'm just really anxious. Like, I can't go to sleep. And my boyfriend was like, yeah, you're like a woman. There's some things like that, no matter what, like,
your boyfriend might've wanted that back.
No. He's like, it's, my therapist said something similar. She's like, sometimes you will be anxious. Like, did I lock the door? Because it's not like, oh, did you lock the door? It's like, oh, I feel kind of unsafe that something bad could happen. Because, like, sometimes it, unfortunately, you know, does. Those things I think are fine to, like, acknowledge that anxiety and to be uncomfortable with it, because, like, it's just like the state of the world. But the stuff I need to work on for myself is, like, you know, realizing that if I make a mistake and accidentally, like, you know, leave the fridge open or a shit in the toilet, that, like, it's just a human being making a mistake.
Well, and I hear that. I guess the thing for me that it always comes down to is I this is just my opinion. Like, I don't think we're really wired to be irrational. Like, people will throw around that term, like, it's irrational, it's distorted, it's, you know, or different versions of that. It's overblown. It's, you know, and I don't, just from an evolutionary perspective, we're not really wired to be like that. But at some point, what it really comes down to is you can't tell me that everybody is going to be upset if they blow up their dog. Everybody's going to be upset if they do something that leads to a breakup. Everybody's going to be upset. The question really is, and sometimes I'll talk with people about this in terms of driving, is that the question is, like, is what you have to do to avoid that make it so that living in and of itself is so problematic that it almost doesn't matter? You know, so for example, like with driving, it's like, you can objectively say, if you never get into a car, actually, I'll even take it a step further. If you never leave your house, especially in this day and age, I can work from home. You know, I see people virtually. I can have food ordered in. I can have people come in here and fix things if I want to. I don't ever have to leave my house, I think, at this point, within reason. That's obviously quite a privilege. But it's like, but the thing is, so when I leave my house, I objectively am increasing the chances that I'm going to die. That's just a fact, especially when I get into a car or I'm going to get hurt. And so it's like the logic of that is actually kind of silly. Like, why on earth would I have it so great here. The only thing is that the reason I do is because then what? I'm so afraid of death or being hurt that I'm not really living. And that decision balance is really, to me, almost with any anxiety. You know, so for example, like, the question isn't whether you taking the pictures is an effective strategy. I actually think it is. The question is, how many times do you take it before preventing the bad thing interferes like with the quality of your life? But it's not, to me, it's not inherently, actually, when the first time you heard it, I was like, that's a great idea. Like, especially
really?
I was like, I should do that.
Like, the person who was like, actually told me it's a good idea. I feel very vindicated.
Well, it's so easy to do. I like, if there's things like the stove, like, you take a stove, the refrigerator, you like just do a couple of things, especially if you're going on, like, I mean, you're traveling all the time. It's like, especially if you're going on vacation or something like that, As soon as I pull out of the driveway and we're in the car, I'm definitely thinking to myself, the stove off. I'm asking my wife, is the stove, oh, did anyone, no one turned the stove on, right? If I had a photo, I'd be like, it's exactly. Probably the issue is, why isn't the first photo enough?
That is the thing for me, for sure.
Yeah.
I really like that you said there, though. I think, like, it's so true. Like, especially relating it back to, like, heartbreak and stuff. It's like, you could just sit in your house and you could just be by yourself and be strong and be, or whatever, be safe. But, you know, sometimes it's interesting how I am such an anxious person, but then I also, like, I love very intensely and I love hard. And, like, I'll often pick kind of, like, chaotic people to fall for that are sometimes I know, like, I'm going to definitely might get a little hurt in the situation because I really love complicated individuals. But it's worth it to, like, to leave the house, and it's worth it to fall in love, and it's worth it, you know, to go outside, even if you're worried that you, like, left a poop in the toilet.
Well, I find that, I mean, you can make anybody happy and not anxious. I mean, take away their ambition, make them totally ignorant to things and get them high as a kite. And you'll be like, you won't have any anxiety. And so one of the things that can be tough is that, like you're saying, it's like, I mean, if you really want to love hard, it's the idea that you're, not you, but anyone's anxious about heartbreak. I mean, like when people talk, I mean, every relationship, romantic relationship that we're in, except for maybe one, is going to end. Every single one. And
even the one that won't end, you're like, one of you is going to die.
That's what I mean. Like if you are lucky, you die looking
first.
Into the eyes of a person that you love. Like,
yeah,
but that's one. That means that every single person, from a person you just start talking to at a bar, to a person you go on a date with, to a person you just went out with a few times, like every one of those relationships is going to end. And then we say, like, well, when people say, like, well, don't be afraid of heartbreak. It's like, it's almost like, well, how are we all not afraid of heartbreak? I mean, our hearts are going to be broken. And the only people who don't get their hearts broken, quite frankly, are the ones that don't let their hearts be open. And then what does that look like?
It's so true. I think, like, and it's weird. I thought that I had experienced heartbreak for the first, like, many times in my life. Like, I was kind of a nerd in high school, and, like, I liked a lot of guys who didn't like me back or whatever. And I dated casually because I've been, like, a working musician since high school. I didn't get to, like, kind of experience the traditional, like, young person's life where, like, you go away to college and have your first, like, real relationship there. Like, I never really got that. I, like, slept with older guys that I knew in the music industry because they were what were available to me. And then when I did experience my first relationship, I was, like, 24. And so when that relationship broke down, like, 2 or 3 years later, I was like, oh, my God. My girlfriends had told me about, like, what heartbreak and depression was, like, and I had thought I'd experienced it. But, like, this is, like, a completely, like, visceral, like, I don't know what to do. I can't eat. I can't sleep. Like, I physically feel it all over me. And my friends were like, yeah, we've been through, like, 2 or 3 of these. And I was like, how on earth do you have the bravery to go out there after knowing, like, what you could experience and do it all again? And, like, they're like, you know what? Like, it's really awful for a while, and you think that you'll never get over it. And then with time, you eventually just, you feel brave enough to try again.
I mean,
and that was
maybe,
what I
but
wanted to write my record about.
Yeah. I mean, maybe not, you know, I don't know what your friend said exactly, but to me, it's more just like, because the alternative is dreadful. First of all, like, who wants to get into a relationship where if you lose it, you're not crushed? I mean, who would you even want to be in a relationship with someone where it's like, hey, no problem. Like, you know, we've been together for 2 or 3 years, but I'm good if this doesn't work out. I mean, there's one thing to say, like, I'll eventually be okay, but you want to be in a relationship like that. And to some degree, I think when people say like, you know, you will get over, which is, it's true. But to me, the reality is that I don't know if someone's going to get over it or not get over it. The only thing I do know is that not trying that again is way worse than whatever the heartbreak is. And if you can kind of come to terms with that, it's the same, you know, it's the same thing like with the checking behavior. It's like, listen, the checking behavior in and of itself, it's just, it's how much, like, because the idea of just checking all the time is not optimal. Yeah. You know, it's like, and, but it's not because it doesn't make sense to some degree. It's just, you know, and I think that that's unfortunately a lot of the things we deal with, and that I don't think people are taught properly. It's like, you are going to have to fail at so many things. Like, I mean, how many of, you know, I mean, you guys are professional musicians. And if you go based on just hit songs, I mean, like, you know, having one hit song, like having like one hit record is like, oh my God. Like, do you, I think
it's amazing.
Yeah. I think, I don't know if I got the story right, but I feel like, I hope I'm not screwing this up. But no, I think someone asked Mark McGrath from Sugar Ray, this is back in my day, like when they first had that "I Just Want to Fly" song. They said, like, what do you think about being labeled as a one hit wonder? And I think it was him. I hope I'm not getting this wrong. But he's like being labeled. He's like, do you know how high up on the music food chain one hit wonder is? He's like, I would kill to be a one hit wonder. And so when you think about that as a musician, let's say that story is even remotely true, like. But the idea is that means that every single song, like so many songs that you write, are not going to be hit songs. And to the extent that that matters, look at all of that failure and look at all of that, if you want to think of it that way. But it's almost like, but which is the bigger failure? Is it the bigger failure that you feel that, or is the bigger failure that you didn't try and you didn't give it that shot?
I think that's sort of the conundrum that like every artist, like, cause we're a Canadian group, and we put out five records before we finally got Blame Brett. We had been dropped by two labels, changed managers twice, you know, tried out a bunch of different things. And then it finally took like, okay, well, I just experienced like the most devastating heartbreak of my life. I guess this is the only thing I can write about. And of course, like, that's the song that like went viral. It was so crazy because I was, and so writing this next record after like such a crazy experience where like I was like, wasn't even really looking for the hit. I was like, I just need to write this shit out. Like, I'm feeling so sad. I'm feeling so anxious. I'm feeling like I'll never love again. All this stuff. Like, it was like a cathartic experience to write that. And then writing this next record, like, really, really, like, I wish I had known that Mark McGrath quote, because it kind of took me a long time to get to the place where I was like, you know what? Like, I've done the thing that like a lot of bands will never get to do, where they have one song that like does really well across the world. And like, people do know you from it. Like, I did the thing that like, so many of my contemporaries and like my friends that are also in bands would die for. And I did it because I, you know, with a song that like really helped me through a bad time. And like, candidly, as hard as we did work and as talented as we are, it was also like kind of fucking luck, you know? It was
perhaps, but I mean, we could argue that if you had two labels, two managers, lots of records, that chances are maybe that particular song, we could argue, but chances are eventually the chances of something good happening probably grew, you know?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. No, I'm not taking away that, but you're right. Like, I really, once I got halfway through this record, I kind of had to be like, listen, whatever happens with this, like, do you just stop writing? I forget who the author was, but I think it was the author who wrote The Invisible Man. I believe he wrote that one book and was like, I'm never going to write anything as good as this. So I'm just never going to write again. And I might be fucking up this reference.
Let's say it was Mark McGrath. Like, you know what? Let's say Mark McGrath is referenced everything that we talk about today.
And I'd heard that story and I'm like, that's really sad. Like, yeah, maybe his next book wouldn't have been a masterpiece like his first one, but like, why would you not? Like, it's not about it being successful. It's ultimately about like, does this make me feel good to do this? Like, does it fulfill me to write? Does it fulfill me? And like, you know, it takes a lot of work, but I'm glad I did finally get back to that place. And, you know, now that I'm finished this fucking sophomore record, but like the record after the hit, maybe the next time I go into the studio, you know, I won't approach it as like, I won't let Anxious Jordan take the wheels and be like, you have to beat your last single or everyone will think you're a failure. You know, I'm going to go in now and be like, I'm going to just write about something funny that happened to me today.
You're like, I'm going to poop in that toilet. Like, no matter what, I'm going to poop in that toilet. And that's just what it is. Or maybe I'm going to poop in the toilet.
Go shit, girl. That's my next hit.
So wait, what is it? Go shit, girl.
Go shit, girl.
Go shit, girl.
Yeah,
that works. One of those works. I will listen to, like, you know. So on that point, if I may, we usually at some point towards the end of the episode, one of the things that we talked about chaos, we talked about all these different things. And one of the things that does tend to work for people is listening to music. That, do you have an artist, a song, an album, a genre, anything where you're like, this is my go-to for anxiety, depression, chaos, boredom, whatever it might be?
Oh, for sure. There's like a different hat for each emotion, you know, there's a different song. Recently, to deal with my anxiety and depression, I just watched Better Man, the Robbie Williams movie, where he is played by a CGI monkey. Fantastic film, maybe the best of the year. I was very moved by it. So I've been listening to a lot of Robbie Williams to deal with my anxiety, particularly Angels. Love that. It's a jam. For depression and heartbreak, the one that always makes me feel like I'm not alone in those experiences was Silver Springs by Fleetwood Mac. I think there's something about that song that really just makes you feel like you're being draped and hugged in Stevie Nicks's shawl. Like, you can feel her covering you with it and holding you and telling you like that it's going to be okay. And that there's just also something in that song where she is clearly so sad and going through it, but also like what I take from it is that like, regardless of what she's going through and the pain and heartbreak she's experiencing, that she would never not, if she had the choice to do it again, she would do it all again, because that relationship meant something to her and helped her become the person that she is. And I just really love that.
No, I loved it when they did the, I don't know what show it was, when they did the live version and she's just screaming it. Oh man. Talk about a relate. I mean, just the idea that not knowing either of them or their relationship, just knowing that the intensity, it was like, it almost looked like she just like in the middle of it, just kind of looked over and just decided, you know what? I think I'm going to sing this right in his face. And they had that moment together and it was like, man, I was like, that is cool. That's why I still listen to the, I love the live version the most. I still listen to that on a regular basis.
It's the best.
Yeah.
I'll watch it and I'll listen and watch that video.
Yeah.
I recently showed that video to my mom and her high school girlfriends and I'm like, how have you not seen this? And they all cry.
Yeah. How have they not seen that? That's not right.
I know.
Well, Jordan, thank you so much for coming and talking about it. These are tough topics and a lot of people struggle with them. And I appreciate you being honest and open about dealing with them and how you cope. I know it's going to help a lot of people just to hear it and maybe even, you know, try some of the things and
yeah,
see if it works.
Try the pictures.
Try the pictures. And
thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I just wish you best of luck and, you know, on you guys having this really successful career, and hope we get a chance to talk again.
Thank you so much.
So there it is. Jordan Miller of The Beaches talking about how she experienced boredom, anxiety, and depression, and the various healthy and unhealthy ways that she managed those experiences.
Now, there's so much to take away from the conversation with Jordan. But one thing I want to focus on was something she said right at the end of our conversation, which is that there's a different hat for each emotion. This is a very important concept for how we understand ourselves and our emotions, and particularly how we may manage boredom and the resulting depression and anxiety that boredom may trigger. Now, one of the reasons that we talk with musicians about mental health is that music is one of the first places that we learn how to understand, process, and express our emotions. And many of us recognize that we like to listen to different kinds of music, different genres, artists, albums, songs, at different times. And in doing so, we can also begin to discover that different music helps us cope with different emotions. That, in and of itself, is a wonderful and powerful tool that we have on our mental health journey. But perhaps an even more important concept that we can take away from what Jordan is saying is that when we listen to different music during different emotional states, we are validating that our emotions exist and that they are important, that they deserve attention and coping. In the same way that we can learn which songs feel best when we experience different emotions, we can also learn other coping strategies as we understand and validate our feelings. And that even emotions that may not seem super important initially, like boredom, are actually incredibly important for us to acknowledge and cope with on our mental health journey. I want to thank Jordan for this wonderful conversation. This season of Going There is brought to you by Johnson & Johnson, who believes that health is everything. Their strength in healthcare innovation empowers them to build a world where complex diseases are prevented, treated, and cured, where treatments are smarter and less invasive, and solutions are personal. Through their expertise in innovative medicine and medtech, they are uniquely positioned to innovate across the full spectrum of healthcare solutions today to deliver the breakthroughs of tomorrow and profoundly impact health for humanity. Learn more at www.jnj.com, at Janssen US, and at JNJINNOVMED on Twitter. And I, of course, want to thank Consequence Podcast Network and SoundMind Live for including me in this wonderful project. And thanks to Pete Wilson and the Rooks for letting us use their song, I Know. If you are struggling with anxiety, depression, or addiction and are looking for help, please call the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration National Helpline at 1-800-622-4357. If you're thinking about harming yourself and want to seek help, please contact the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline at 988. You may also go to the Sound Mind Live and Consequence websites for more information. So be healthy, be safe, and be kind to yourself and others. See you next time at the Crossroads.
Hi, this is James Mercer from The Shins.
This is Shirley Manson.
This is Lotte Hurst, co-founder of The Cure.
This is Huey Lewis giving you the story behind the song.
The Story Behind the Song is back with an exciting second season. We peel back the layers on music's most iconic hits with legendary artists like The Killers, Heart, The B-52s, Violent Femmes, Jewel, Huey Lewis, Modern English, and more. To keep the music flowing, we'll be sprinkling in classic episodes from our archives between each new one. So check out The Story Behind the Song wherever you get your podcast.
Hello, and welcome to Long Time No See, the podcast. Each week, we'll be pairing two blindfolded comedians who've agreed to sit down with a mystery guest. I'll be putting them on the spot with a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Without further ado, please remove your blindfolds and introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Michael.
Hi, Andrea.
I have to be honest with you, I am so relieved to see a Jew.
Do you have any irrational fears? What's the worst fad you were into? Is there any job that you would be terrible at?
Underwater welder?
Don't say that about yourself.
Do you guys have any useless talents?
I kicked one of those delivery robots.
Got what? You kicked one?
Yelling. I kick those all the time.
They have names on them.
Good.
I can make smoke come out of my mouth with nothing.
Do it.
You want to see it?
What the f***? Are you a dragon?
Out now, Long Time No See the Podcast, Season 2. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.